Hello, my name is Chris Papagiannis. I'm the Managing Director of Economics 21, a partner organization of the Manhattan Institute. I'm here today with Nicole Gelinas, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and we're going to discuss the ongoing fallout of the housing crisis. We'll also talk about some possible solutions. Nicole, you just had a piece run in the Washington Examiner on how presidential candidates are going to have to address the housing issue, and you have some interesting suggestions for actions they could propose in the coming cycle. Why don't we start with what you think is the real problem that candidates have to address?
Sure. Thank you, Chris. One of the biggest problems is simply the legacy of the housing and credit bubble, which is too much mortgage debt. This is something that we haven't heard any of the presidential candidates, or frankly, President Obama, talk very much about. But someone or everyone has got to bring it up if they really want to tackle our economic problems. So here we go. In 2000, before the housing bubble started in earnest, or although some people might disagree about that and say it's actually been going on for even longer than 2000, but if we start in the year 2000, there was $4.9 trillion worth of mortgage debt outstanding in the U.S. By early 2007, the peak of the bubble, or the peak of the mortgage borrowing, that number had more than doubled to $10.6 trillion outstanding. So just 7 years, double the amount of mortgage debt in the economy. Since then, we've heard so much about foreclosures, people walking away from their homes, bank losses, losses related to derivatives based on mortgages. But in the end, according to the Federal Reserve data, we haven't gotten rid of much of this mortgage debt. We're down to only about $9.9 trillion, $10 trillion. We're only down 5% then from the bubble era peaks. We've got so many families sending good money after bad, essentially. They've got to keep servicing a mistake of the bubble. That's money that they can't put into their kids' education, they can't put into their retirements, they can't put into the capital markets to create jobs for the future rather than protect financial industry from losses of the past. Now, this is a complex issue, as we'll get into, but the first step in fixing it is just to admit that it is a problem.
What you're alluding to here, I think maybe are a couple sub-points, right? That so many borrowers out there are underwater. By underwater, I mean that they owe more on their mortgage than their home is actually worth. And then sort of separate from that, though, you have borrowers who could be underwater, but borrowers maybe who aren't underwater, but are just not able to make their payments and have fallen delinquent. Are those two discrete problems, or is it one big problem? And, you know, are the solutions before us, do we have to address them simultaneously, or should we be focusing on just those borrowers who have started to miss payments and are delinquent?
Well, I think they are two discrete issues, because this is, in the end, debt that was based on the value of an asset. So the underwater issue is much more clear-cut, where you have this debt out there that simply cannot be repaid unless there's great cost to economic growth, unless property values rise suddenly, exponentially, over the next few years. On the foreclosure issue, whereas the other part of the problem is you've got people whose mortgages may still be less than the value of the house, meaning in a foreclosure, the lender could get mortgage back and then some, but yet people have lost their jobs, couldn't afford the property in the first place or whatever. That's kind of an old-fashioned problem, you know, a problem, but not a new problem. The new problem comes from the fact that 22% of these properties with a mortgage are underwater, and a lot more people are very close to the line. On the foreclosure issue, I think the big problem from financial point of view is you've got homes that have been delinquent going on years in states like Florida, Nevada, Arizona, even New York, where there are much fewer foreclosures. It takes a long time to do these things. I think the financial system cannot be operating prudently as a free market if you've got hundreds of billions of dollars of loans out there where the asset backing the loan is deteriorating, and no one even knows what kind of state the asset is in. So I think that's the first approach to it, is that the regulators who are supposed to govern securities values, for example, to make sure that we have free, fair, open, transparent pricing of securities, supposed to govern or supervise banks to make sure that they're valuing their assets properly and their clients' assets properly, you can't have an asset or the collateral that backs an asset languish forever. If you've got a property that's delinquent, you've got to do the foreclosure within a 6 month time period. If you cannot complete the foreclosure within another 6 months after that, no matter what the excuse, you know, the paperwork is missing, the courts are backed up and so forth, then the lenders or the lender's agents should have to write down the value of that mortgage to take it out of foreclosure. And that's, you know, that's one way of addressing this issue. That would then cause many other things, which we can discuss. But the bottom line is, cannot let these assets languish for months and years on end. Just like the stock or bond market, if I bought a stock that was worth $80, it's only worth $40 today. Financial industry should not be involved in a long-term fiction to pretend it's really worth $70. We have to take the losses so we can move on.
So in your opinion, who in the mortgage space, right? We've got banks, we've got borrowers, we have regulators who are obviously overseeing these banks. Who's most behind the delay, right? Is it the banks? Is it the government, partly through a lot of the federal programs that they have out there trying to help borrowers stay in their homes and maybe be confusing or providing some uncertainty for banks in how to actually process some of these delinquent mortgages or loans and trying to think through whether there should be a modification or whether they should push those mortgages forward through foreclosure. Just to restate, I mean, who do you think really is behind the delay? Is it the banks today?
I think it's everyone. We can start with the banks and also the investors who are not banks. Many of the first mortgages that are the legacy of the credit bubble, these are owned by investors in securities, you know, mortgage-backed securities. These are the toxic securities everyone was talking about in 2008. Who owns these securities? Mutual funds, life insurance funds, pension funds to a lesser extent. People who own the securities and the people who manage the securities for these other people, they don't want to see the value of the securities fall down. You know, and that's a rational impulse. So a lot of investors are able to do is say, there is no market price for this security. So we kind of create a market price based on all of these models, and the government, you know, kind of signs off on this. And what happens is that the people who run these mortgage securities, who are in charge of foreclosures and defaults and so forth, can tell these investors, it's okay, we're doing these workouts, it's going to work out fine in the future, so you can value it at X percent. Market might say it should be worth a lot less than X percent. And so there's one place where you see the impulse to stay in limbo, that the securities holders would much rather wait and see than finish these foreclosures and have a definite low price rather than maybe a slightly higher price or much higher price a couple years in the future. So you've got the investors. You've got the banks, too. Banks don't hold as many first mortgages, but as they hold second mortgages. The first mortgages principal is written down. Second mortgages, in a lot of cases, should just disappear. So the banks don't want anyone touching first mortgages, or that will hurt their second mortgages. Then you get to the government. Government won't like any of this. They don't want securities prices to go down because a lot of these securities are still rated AAA. They don't want to see another mass downgrade of AAA securities, destabilize the financial system, annoys people, and so forth. Nor do they want to see the banks suffer big new losses because of the second mortgages. And then it comes down to the individual homeowners, that people in the government together may want to maintain the fiction, although I think regular people have figured this out before the government, that this is just a blip, that the bubble is normal, and that we're going to go right back up to 10% housing increases every year, and so you can just wait out this bad debt, and in 5 years it'll be fine. I mean, it's stated government policy almost to keep house prices high.
So, what you just walked us through is alarming and scary in many respects, because I think on the one hand, you're saying that we have these banks, and in many respects, certain aspects of their books, right, how they are valuing the mortgages that they have on their balance sheet or the mortgage-backed securities that they own, that the prices on their balance sheet are a fiction, right, to some degree. And then on the other hand, right, you have federal regulators, the government, looking at those banks and trying to determine whether it's in the country's interest right now to put pressure, right, on those banks to lower those values to a more fair, more accurate value. But then they have to weigh that against the losses that those banks may actually take as a result of the new valuation. And there are some estimates out there that those losses could be astronomical, right? That they could be measured in the hundreds of billions of dollars, right? And, you know, it wasn't so long ago that we had TARP and the notion that the federal government needed to provide banks with capital injections so that they appeared to be solvent and healthy. So are regulators right now, are they faced with sort of two bad options, right, of putting pressure on the banks to lower the values of these assets, mortgages and mortgage-backed securities? But then on the other hand, maybe as a result of that process, the banks are going to have to raise additional capital or find additional capital so that they can remain solvent. Is it really that black or white?
Yeah, that's true. Doing aggressive foreclosures is going to cascade into more people going delinquent on their mortgages, because it's only at that point that if regulators, FDIC, Fed, Comptroller of the Currency, SEC, which is involved in pricing securities accurately, if the financial industry understands that they are going to hold markets to a deadline of closing out foreclosures or writing down the principal, then and only then is when they have an incentive to write down principal, because then writing down principal proactively can, it doesn't create a new loss or realize a loss. It actually may curtail a loss and make the loss less than it would be. In other words, if you've got a spreadsheet of people who you think might go delinquent based on who else in the neighborhood has gone delinquent and so forth, go to these people, say, you know, Fred, I think your house was worth $200,000 5 years ago. It's worth $120,000 today. We're going to cut the mortgage down to $150,000 and call it even. See on how many people that actually works where you forestall the foreclosures. That's going to cause a lot of losses, tremendous amount of losses. The problem is, I mean, and this gets you into the philosophical issue, this is a problem that Greece is and Europe is dealing with as well. Who should bear the brunt of losses that in the end are from people lending money without thinking about the consequences of their lending, including the fact that the assets were not worth the value being lent against and the people did not have the capacity to repay it? When you lend money recklessly or for whatever other bad reason you have, you should take the loss on that bad lending. In fact, that's the only way to make sure that lending in the future is more rational, is to have these lenders take their very real losses.
Well, it sounds a bit like a tough message, right, for some of the candidates in the 2012, you know, cycle, as candidates are thinking about this issue and trying to develop their response. It seems as though some of that message may have to be tough love, right, that in order to clear the market and rebound, there may need to be more losses, not only at the banks, but also in neighborhoods throughout our states, as there may need to be more foreclosures that are the result of new and fair values. One additional point, and you know, kind of turn it over to you to articulate a bit about just how candidates can message this problem. We started off by talking about negative equity and how many borrowers were underwater. There's a fascinating stat or series of data points that I think, sadly may alarm some of our listeners here. But Nevada has a negative equity percentage, so the percentage of all borrowers who are underwater, it's 63% in Nevada. In Arizona, it's 50%. In Florida, it's 46%. In Michigan, it's 36%. And in California, it's 31%. Those five states make up 40% of total underwater borrowers. Those are important states on the electoral map for candidates. And can kind of fast forward and see ahead how some of these candidates may struggle to talk about this issue when the solution may require more near-term pain for both financial institutions, but obviously more importantly for borrowers and voters in those states. So I guess, you know, to wrap up, what is the message, you know, the solution that you would advocate candidates look at and consider?
Well, I think people are ready in these states. I mean, I only know Florida because my mom lives down in Florida, but people have been through 5 years of this now. The housing bubble peaked in July 2006, so, you know, happy half-decade anniversary of a sinking home market, and a lot of people realized this before Washington realized it, that the game was kind of up, you know, well into late 2006, early 2007. And so they've seen how this happens slowly, that people leave their second home, they just, you know, say goodbye, I'm not coming back next winter, that's it, I can't afford to maintain this home if it's a money loser, not a money gainer. People have moved away into rental apartments to cut this mortgage payment or their monthly payment in half. You've got abandonment. No one knows, does someone own the house? Did the bank foreclose? What's going to happen? So you have these houses sit empty for months and years on end. And at first, psychology was very different than it was today, where you had people panicking and saying, my house is worth less than I bought it for. What do I do? And at this point, you see signs on the houses that say, you know, the house is for sale for $99,000. A few years ago, people would have screamed that means all of their houses are worth $99,000 and they're all in trouble. At this point, they just want the prices to come down so you have someone living in that house and you have some certainty. They'd rather see the houses come down and start to go back up than live with this for another half decade. So I think a candidate that says we've pretended the problem away for another half decade. If you don't want another half decade of pretending, this is what we have to do. We have to take more of the pain quick rather than slowly. And by the way, there's a moral issue too, that a lot of people think it's immoral to walk away from debt. Well, certainly, if you take out the debt fraudulently, that's true. But if you are caught in a market where what made sense 6 years ago no longer makes sense, this is a business decision. That this happens all the time in financial markets, debt workouts, principal write-downs, and so forth. You know, if you lend against a power plant and power prices go down, the lender is going to take a hit on the value of that plant. It can be, in fact, immoral to pretend that things are going to get better and keep your life in limbo for years on end at the cost of uncertainty for your family.
Well, Nicole, I think you may be onto something. I think that's an honest, straightforward message, and I think that candidates are certainly going to have to consider it, because it's a big issue. It's not going away. We have been through a period in time where a lot of people are pretending and are trying to spin their message in a positive way, but I think maybe what we need now is a dose of reality. And thank you for spending time with us today and walking us through what's a very complicated issue, and I think also providing a bit of a roadmap for some of the candidates this cycle. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.